Got a Friend in Us. This is episode 13, Dragnet, from 1987. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, I'm going to ask you just the facts, sir. We were supposed to have a guest on this episode, Mike Flynn, who lives in California, the city of Dragnet, or Los Angeles, the city of Dragnet. Hello, the state of Dragnet, the city of Dragnet. Some scheduling conflicts arose. He could not join us. We've got something that he has asked us to read later. I don't want to sort of influence our impressions of this movie. My first impression of this movie, though, Mike, is that I'm going to need to watch this again, because I feel like by the end I was enjoying it, but it took me so long to kind of figure out what it was doing. And I had never seen the series, like any of the series, right? I think there were a couple different series.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. All I basically knew about Dragnet is that I stay up all night, I go to sleep watching Dragnet. That's
exactly
the entire history. Once I saw the movie, I knew the theme, I knew just the facts, man, I knew the name Joe Friday. Like, I know things about it, but I couldn't have told you it was from this sort of property. My knowledge of the thing was completely nothing. So for me to sort of, like, be thrown into the water, and this works as a standalone movie, but I wasn't sure what it was doing, especially since I was like, is this supposed to be a comedy? And then it is, but it's like, it's a weird thing. So I think with that said, I'm going to need to sort of watch this again to really have a true grasp on what my thoughts are. But you'd seen this before, right? You rewatched it today or this week.
Yeah. So funny enough, the first time I ever saw this movie was on an airplane in 1987 on the way to Orlando, Florida.
Ooh.
Visiting Disneyland with Disney World with the family.
So you were 8?
Yeah, so I was 8
that
when I first saw.
Feels way too young to watch this movie.
Well, it was on a plane, so it was the edited version, so there's no strip club.
Back when there was like one screen or like a couple screens for the whole plane, right?
Yeah. So like half the plane was watching this and half the plane was watching Spaceballs. And then on the way home, they sort of flipped it and we watched Spaceballs and the rest of the plane watched Dragnet.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the first time I saw this. And then when we got back, I have this on VHS. So at some point the family bought it. I mean, we liked Hanks and Aykroyd a lot from other movies. So I have like my old copy from the 80s on VHS. It's been in the family for years. And I actually watched some Dragnet as a teenager, staying up late. The Nick at Night was huge when I was a teenager.
You go to sleep watching Dragnet.
I did go to, that's funny how I did. But it was like Dragnet 69, and it was cool because they were true stories. You know what I mean? Like, and it would be like, damn, I can't believe this actually happened.
Oh, so like, they were like ripped from the headlines before, like SVU ripped from the headlines?
Yeah, so like the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Like that's a line from the opening of every episode. And there's sort of a joke about this in here where they say a name and what it's been changed to. And I think at that point, like you're supposed to realize, oh, this isn't going to be like a Michael Mann Heat version of Dragnet, which would be cool. Maybe nowadays, you know, this isn't a straight play on it. This is more like what they did now. It's popular, like where it's not necessarily a spoof, but it's just a whole different take. It's like a comedy. It's almost like a satire of Dragnet in a way, but it also works incredibly well on its own, I think.
I'm going to take this time right now, and I'm going to read the thing that, or I'm going to sort of synopsize what Mike wrote, because I think what Mike Flynn, what he wrote about this sort of gave me kind of the proper context on how to watch this, because I think calling it a satire is accurate, but it's also not quite, like it's this weird sort of hybrid thing that I've never seen before. So Mike wrote that he picked this because it's his favorite Tom Hanks comedy, which I think is a bold claim. I think I'm of the mind personally that I'm sort of, it's up there. It's this and Money Pit, I think, are my top two so far. Mm. I don't know what that order is actually going to be. This might be number one, but I think I need to see it again before I can sort of accurately rank it.
Yeah, I like Hanks as a cop in this. I'll tell you that much. I think he's working well.
For sure. Absolutely. He says he remembers walking around Santa Monica 20 years after he saw this for the first time, walking with his sister, and they were talking about the movie, and that they both remembered all the words to City of Crime, which is the kind of the closing rap, the sort of, you know, the Amos and Andrew style.
You know, the suburban nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Of Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks, of course.
You better
And they were both talking about how they liked this movie more than Ghostbusters, you know, the other Dan Aykroyd big joint from the 80s. And Mike was saying that, you know, back when he saw it for the first time as a little kid, he liked it because of what he says are the implied boobs. Like, there's, I don't know that there's nudity in here, but there's a lot of very attractive women in various states of undress.
Yes.
And so I think for, you know, a pubescent or prepubescent boy or whatever, this checks a lot of boxes. Like, it's funny, it's got action, it's got pretty ladies. Like, there's a lot of reasons. But he said, as time went on, and this is where this is the reason I'm bringing it up now, he says, because basically because of Dan Aykroyd's dedication to the source material, like, he loves it so much and he's so true to what it was that that's why it works as a comedy, because he's so deadpan and so basically kind of like a fish out of water. Like, he's a 50s hard-boiled detective kind of in the 80s, right? Or a 60s in the 80s. And, like, it doesn't work, which is why it works.
He's the only one in, like, he's in his own movie. Like, he's in the version of Dragnet that I'm talking, like, the direct adaptation, which is interesting because Hanks is set up as the straight man, but Aykroyd is, like, they're both straight. It's really weird. I love the dynamic between
them. They're both straight men, but they both play as also the comic relief in relation to the other one. Sort of,
yes,
right? Like, it's just because they don't know how to coexist in the same world.
The buddy cop.
Right. And again, I wrote down, you know, it's not really good cop, bad cop. It's like by the rules cop versus, you know, playing by nobody's rules cop, right? Like, it's, they're not necessarily doing the old fashioned good cop, bad cop, but they're like, one's nice and one's mean. It's like, one is literally by the book, quoting the book, and the other is just, I'm going to do this however I need to get it done because I was undercover as sort of like a hippie, you know, in the impound lot or whatever, and I don't really quite know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost saw it as a pretty interesting sort of look at the clash of generations, right? Like, Aykroyd is, you know, right out of the 50s, you know, with all that original Joe Friday sort of, like you said, like, super by the book, follows the rules. And then Hanks is the more modern cop, right? It's like how things kind of were turning that day, where it's like cutting corners maybe, or just like not calling it in and trying to just follow your own leads. And it feels almost more like those movies that were being made, more like Beverly Hills Cop at the time, where, you know, you have to go against the system, even though you're a part of it, because the system is part of the problem. Like in this movie, right? Like, the police commissioner is in on it.
They're all pagans,
Yeah, they're all part of People Against Goodness and Normalcy.
Yep. And then Mike says that watching Hanks's half-assed punk rocker Pep Strebeck is great against type part. He has the facade, but the way he barely keeps up with Aykroyd's deadpan delivery or deadpan exposition seals the chemistry. And I think that works. And I think, you know, between that and between, you know, what we were saying before about, you know, Aykroyd as the by-the-book cop and sort of the old guy, my favorite moment, if we're going to jump ahead to this for a second, my favorite moment of this movie is when it switches. When Aykroyd gets captured, and then all movie long it's been Aykroyd as his by-the-book cop. Like, it's his movie. Like, it's firmly his movie. Hanks is firmly, like, the second guy. Like, he's the you know, the co-captain or whatever, the co-star. Like, this is Dan Aykroyd's vehicle. And all movie long, he's been doing the narration, he's been driving the narrative, and then he gets captured with the virgin that they save, and we'll get to that. But then the narrative, the voiceover, switches to Hanks. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, this I was not expecting. Like, this now becomes Hanks's movie, for, I mean, at least for, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. But he's kind of playing the role that Aykroyd was, but he's also doing it how he is. Like, we cut to him in bed having sex with that lady cop that he had met and he had been, you know, sleeping with, and he's doing this, like, sort of hard-boiled detective dialogue, but, like, next to a hamburger phone. It's like this sort of, you know, it's his version of the hard-boiled detective, and then from then on, he's sort of, he's the driving force, he's the one who solves the crime, he's the one who has to save and bust out Aykroyd after he gets captured. And I like, that's my favorite part, where, like, the movie was already kind of weird and meta and, you know, making fun of itself in a way by playing it so straight they were having fun with it. But then when it flipped and it became another version of that, like, that's what really, that was my favorite part of it, because it was like, it was sort of a hat on a hat. Like, you thought it was already this one thing. Well, it's going to take that one thing that you thought it was and it's going to twist even further.
Yeah. And that scene, you know, it's funny because it starts out as him narrating, like, his day-to-day thing. But then when he gets to the station, he actually snaps at one point and becomes Joe Friday when he tells the guy to, like, clean up and get the jelly donut off his face and respect the badge, and he has to, like, slap himself to knock himself out of it to, like, wake himself up and stuff.
I love that. Like, he yells at the guy and then he's just like, what is going, like, I don't know, like, who was that?
Yeah, and it's like he's rubbed off on him. That's great. And I mean, this movie is so weird in that way. Like, I watched it with roommate and she was like, oh, it's kind of like Stripes in a way, where, like, halfway through it becomes like a different movie. Like, in this movie, like, they're on a case and then they get kicked off the case, and then they, like, go out and have dinner together, and, like, he meets his grandmother, and he's on the date with Connie. You know, the story keeps progressing. Like, she IDs the pagan leader at dinner and everything. But it's just so nice how, like, it's willing to keep going and changing, like, having Joe get kidnapped and having it turn into Hanks's movie, you know, basically for most of the third act there. It's just really interesting how it's written. Like, the structure of this movie and, like, the downtime is really interesting and funny when it comes around and stuff. I feel like it's just a little different than stuff we not just get nowadays, but even back then. It just sort of feels like its own thing.
Right. I think another thing that's sort of weird and kind of cool, I guess, about this is that it sort of feels, and I don't think this is how it would have been back in the 80s, but this kind of feels like it would be like a through line of, say, four or five episodes, like an arc of a TV show, of a cop show today, that it's like sort of a series of, like, the through line, I guess, kind of what Justified did in its early seasons, when, like, it would have standalone episodes, but then as the season went on, it would sort of start layering in stories about the big bad, the big villain of the season, right? And I feel like the way that this is sort of told or structured, and maybe it was just because of the way that I watched, like, I had stopping and starting, like, I did not watch this in the best way, and I apologize to the movie for that. I'm sorry, Dragnet. But I did watch the entire thing, and I enjoyed it. But I feel like it's kind of like different things, like, you know, like the dinner scene, or like this scene, or like that scene, or whatever. It kind of feels like a scene from an episode or two that's sort of strung together, and, like, this is kind of the combination of all that story to tell the one story. Because it feels like this is sort of like a single episode of TV, or maybe a double episode, or whatever, but it kind of feels like there's just a lot, like, jumping here, jumping there, you know, Aykroyd sort of following hunches, and it feels kind of like a longer arc than maybe just, like, two episodes of TV, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's sort of putting this movie into perspective I never tried to approach it from in, like, 30 years. And it's like, if this could work without the jokes, like, it's got all, like, the detective work, like, they're going to all the different leads, they're going to, like, the zoo, the landlady, you know, the Playboy mansion, like, they're going all over town, they're going undercover to the rally, they're, like, you know, and then there's also, like, the underlying crime that's going on with the reverend who's in league with the police commissioner to kill the city officials and take over Los Angeles and, like, basically, like, turn it into a den of sin, right? And they're just gonna profit off of the people and run the whole place into the ground. Like, that's some, like, Chinatown shit. Like, it's so weird that there's, into the backbone of this, there's, like, an actually, like, interesting sort of crime that they have to solve.
It also feels like, in that way, I think, kind of like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is another sort of, you know, all over the place, like, sort of seems kind and sort of bubbly and Christmassy and pleasant on top, and you're like, oh, wait, no, like, there's shit going on. And I feel like it's that kind of, in a sense, hard-boiled detective story framed with humor that gives you something that you haven't really seen before. And I like that element of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, me too.
Is your favorite moment the end where Hanks becomes, like, the sort of the real cop, or is there a different part of this that you like more?
It's so tough. Like, I mean, I understand, like, this is not the, like...
Like, do you love this movie? Is this your favorite Hanks movie so far?
Well, this, I was just gonna say, like, it's not like this movie's, like, incredible, right? I'm willing to admit, I think it's, like, a wistful thinking kind of thing, right? Where it's just, like, I hit it at the right age and I know it so well. Probably like Mike Flynn, I caught it at the right time and it, like, bore its way into me. So I really do like it a lot. I'm not sure if it's my favorite, but it's definitely hard to find a favorite moment. However, the hardest I laughed this time is when he first meets Hanks, when they first meet each other as partners. And, you know, like you said, Hanks is, like, this undercover hippie guy. You know, he's definitely looks like he's, straight out of True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dan Aykroyd sort of reading him the Riot Act. He's like, I'm your new partner. He's like, not just like that, you're not. He's like, my new
10.2,
partner.
10.2, 10.5, 10.6, yeah. 10.8, whatever. Yeah.
And he's a clean haircut, like, polished shoes, all this stuff. And it just cuts directly to, like, a shot of Hanks all cleaned up, like,
yep,
just exactly like he was told to. But, and I think all the time that passed was like 30 minutes or something. So, like, it happened, like, immediately. And I don't know. Just that moment just had me laughing really hard this time. I was laughing a lot this movie.
There was one little moment. I think a lot of the humor in this, and I think it's designed this way, is to come from Dan Aykroyd's commitment as the character to that sort of hard-boiled detective thing. But, like, when they go to the strip club and then, you know, Hanks is into it, but then Dan Aykroyd's just drinking a cup of coffee or whatever, and there's just a stripper who, like, bends over and looks at him between her legs and he just goes, ma'am? Just like that, like, just like little things like that. Like, I think a lot of the time, like, I enjoy what he's doing, but I think it's like, it's moments like that where it's him in a different kind of scenario that really makes it funny. Like, that really clicks for me.
It's funny, like, when I was watching this, I was talking to the roommate about how, like, they don't like each other, or, like, they're not familiar, they're strangers, right? They're partners thrown together, but just through the detective work they're doing and the like maniacs that they have to talk to and meet, they're starting to sort of rub off on each other and appreciate each other and like bond over it. And so that by the end of the movie, I feel like they're actually friends. Like I buy that relationship. Like that's another thing about this movie that I thought was interesting is like they actually feels like they're growing, like learning from each other. And at the end, you know, Joe isn't so stuck up and Strebeck isn't so loosey-goosey anymore. They've actually sort of centered each other a little bit. Or something like that. And yeah, I just thought that just added a cool extra level to it. And oh, one more thing too that I just that also reminded me what you were saying. There's like a lot of like running gags in this movie. Did you pick up on any? I'll sort of go down. I just have like a mini list,
yeah,
but
go for it.
they point together a lot at a lot of stuff. The I'll drive. You know, they always say like I'll drive or I'll drive or something like that. That always comes up a lot. So I think there's a lot of that in television too. And so maybe that's another thing that like you were saying earlier where it feels a little bit like a couple episodes of something. There's like just this great connective tissue like running throughout, even though structurally it's not necessarily traditional, but like all these things are tying it together.
You know, one thing is that it's not exact. I want to make sure that we address this fact before we go any further. I like that the guy from the Phantom Zone from Superman 1 and 2 is here.
Oh,
He's so menacing
yeah.
as a limo driver, as Emil Mutz. And I think it's not quite a running joke the way that you were, but it comes back a couple times where Hanks threatens to slam his balls in that drawer,
Oh
and then you know
yeah.
Aykroyd comes back in the interrogation room and he opens the drawer, and then we cut to this guy who's like terrifying, who literally in this movie flips a car with Dan Aykroyd and his new girlfriend upside down, like he picks it up by the fender and flips it 180 degrees, just opening the drawer, like you can see the cut to the guy's face, he just looks terrified. And I love that he's so good in this movie, both as like that vulnerable kind of guy, but also just like this menacing badass. I'm sure I've seen him in other things, but I was like, why do I know him? And so I was like, oh, right, yeah, because he's in Superman. So, or Superman 2, specifically, more so. But yeah, like, I think he's great in this movie.
I think that guy is on a episode of How Did This Get Made? That's a great episode, and wrote a book.
Yes, yeah, and I think they did a bonus episode where he talks a lot of shit about Richard Lester, I think.
Oh, well, sorry, Soderbergh.
I think maybe not. I think there's something like he's got beef to pick with people.
He wrote a book from what he said, like he grew up in like the mafia, like kind of stuff, like a child of that world and everything. So very interesting dude. But yeah, I love his presence. I love when Hanks is supposed to be him and he's like, I've been sick, you know, like because he clearly weighs like, you know, 80 pounds less than the dude and is like 3 or 4 good inches shorter than him.
Do you have a least favorite moment? I'm trying to think of what mine might be. I don't know if I have one right now, but do you have a least favorite moment in this movie?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Like, there's definitely a couple. I guess what's kind of weird, I mean, maybe it's not that strange because you come to find out like this pagan cult, they're like doing some kind of like cult ritual. Like it seems as if they're trying to summon a demon. Like this feels very Aykroyd inspired, like Ghostbustery kind of where it's like we have to sacrifice a virgin. And you know, I don't know that nowadays that just kind of like hit me. I was like, it's weird that they're calling her like the Virgin Connie Swell and like Virgin this and virgin that.
I agree, although I do think that, like, politically correct or not, whatever, I don't know if I can comment on that, but it pays off at the end where Dan Aykroyd says, I spent a night with Connie Swell, and Tom Hanks says, don't you mean the virgin Connie Swell? And he just, like, makes that look, and then Tom Hanks, like, takes a second to be like, oh, and he's like, oh! And, like, he makes a face, and just, like, I think whether or not that's the right thing to say, and whether or not that's, you know, the right way to write a female character, that joke, I think, kind of made it worth it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt, like, this is a lot better than a lot of the raunchy 80s comedies out there. Like, even though, like, we get the Dabney Coleman stuff as, you know, Hugh Hefner and all of that kind of bait magazine stuff and, like, that whole through line. But I feel like, again, that at least services the story, you know, because it's all about how, like, the false religious dude is in league with and lying to the smut peddler and everything. Like, I don't know. I just, that worked better for the story in a way. Maybe even just, like, the whole, like, cult sacrifice thing was just like it just feels like so far out of left field at a point. Like I'm cool with it being, you know, with like a secret society and all that kind of stuff, but it was just a little odd watching it this time being like, really, like this huge snake and the lion's mane, the girl and everything. It was just, yeah, not that it's like the worst, but I'm, you know, I'm struggling to find something
Yeah, and like I don't know if I have one either, and it's not because I love this movie. Like I think, you know, we've said that, but just like there's nothing like this movie is so specifically consistent from start to finish that like it's hard to find a moment that just doesn't that sort of stands out as negative. You know, I like, you know, you mentioned the shaving the lion's mane. I like that there's, you know, they're talking like there's got the lion with the mohawk basically, and you know, Hank says to the kids, like, kids, it'll grow back, and they're like, yeah. Like, just, like, dumb little things like that, like, I really, really liked. The one thing that I do like, and I think that, you know, for a movie that's basically, like, not about Playboy Playmates, but one of the, or the equivalent, the bait models, that one of the things that the Pagan group does is, right before the 25th anniversary, like, this special double issue, this, like, monumentous thing, they go to the publisher, they steal a bunch of the magazines, they burn the rest, they want to basically, it seems like, take smut out of the world, that's part of the thing, or whatever. One through line that I really, really thought was funny, both because it gave a weird kind of dimension to the characters that they otherwise I don't think would get, but also because it just said a lot about Tom Hanks. But Tom Hanks knew his character, you know, he knew everything about every bait model. He knew their names, he knew their like their turn-ons, their turn-offs, but like weirdly, considering the fact that they're just supposed to be on screen as like eye candy, right? Like, they're all there in bikinis, they're all there just like to look gorgeous. The fact that he was able to like, and again, this sounds dumb, I think, but I do think that there's merit to it. The fact that they all had names, that they all had things, like they were like not quite three-dimensional people, but like more than just eye candy. That they all had like personalities and yeah. interests and likes and dislikes. Like the fact that they each, even if they didn't speak, I feel like the fact that they were each more than just looks was kind of refreshing in a way. And it was this weird, I was like, oh, like, it was funny, and then I was like, wait, there's actually something here, I think. Like, there's actually something that feels, like, new and kind of unique and, in a weird way, empowering.
Well, it's funny. I got sort of the same vibe to a degree off of all the lady cops in the movie, you know? Like, A, the fact that there's, like, I think Hanks is dates, like, two or three different ones. Like, granted, he's dating them and sleeping with them. Okay, I get it. And most of them don't have lines. And the one that does have a line, it says, am I going to see you again? And he goes, well, you have to. I'm wearing your underwear.
Yep.
You know, that it turns out to be like a joke and everything. Okay. But, you know, at least I was like, well, at least, you know, we're seeing women as cops in a Dragnet movie. Like, I thought that was pretty cool too. And yeah, and I you know, I agree with what you're saying about the Playmates as well. Like, they could have, it didn't feel like that was the punchline. I felt like the punchline was that like what Aykroyd says to Hanks, where he's like, you know everybody, they should transfer you to missing persons. And it's like, yeah, like he's a cop, he would retain this kind of information, he, you know, he's good at remembering this kind of like minute details about things. Like, it kind of comes back later where he just, yeah, I don't know, I just, it was cool because it built the story as well.
If I have to pick something that's my least favorite moment, and I think this is intentionally this way because it gives the character growth in a way, but I don't like that we don't know much about his history. It feels like, I don't know if it's true or not, that when it's the virgin Connie Swale, like, you know, maybe he was a virgin too, like, we're not sure. Like, I like that it motivates him to do something, right? Like, this affection from this woman gives him purpose and gives him drive in this movie. Like, I think that that works. But I don't like that he's so one-dimensional that, like, the only glimpse of a backstory that we get is that he had a kitten once. Like, I know that's kind of like a sort of a funny joke or whatever, but I feel like for someone that we spend so much time with, whose personal growth is so important to the movie, the fact that we don't really know a ton about who he was or where he came from, really, I kind of wish that I wanted to know more about that. I don't know how you do that in this movie, but, you know, I just sort of want more of, a little bit more sort of filled in there.
I hear you. I think they tried to do it when they introduce his grandma, right? Like, they go out to dinner together and there's that whole thing and he's like, it's my grandma Monday. But yeah, I mean, they try to squeeze a little of that in. I agree with you. I wish like him and Connie had just gone on the date alone and he had sort of, you know, opened up about himself and his past and his like, you know, clearly he idolizes his uncle Joe Friday from the original show. They even have a
his
picture
namesake,
of the
yeah.
mm-hmm. actor, and their boss is the guy who played the original partner on Dragnet.
Harry Morgan, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which also, just real quick, he has, when they call, like, he doesn't believe in the whole movie, and then when they finally call and, like, this is what's going on, his facial reactions when he's on the phone is so good. Like, he goes through every emotion, like, he's, like, angry, and then confused, and then, like, upset, and then, like, vengeful. Like, it's just, like, in, like, 3 seconds, he does, like, four or five faces. Like, it's great. So that guy, like that.
I think he was on MASH also, or okay. something. So he's got, you know, dramatic and
well, there were only like seven shows back then. Like, you know, if you figure if you're a good actor, you're on a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think I agree, though, about that. About the, like, the dinner scene, that just, like, I didn't know. Like, I know that you have to, like, run into them there, and, like, you sort of need a reason for Christopher Plummer and for Connie, the Virgin Connie Swain, to be in the same room. Like, I feel like there needs to be reason why they see it there, but it just felt like kind of, not lazy, but kind of coincidental that they're all there. Also, by the way, I love that this is, like, a tight, like, an hour 38 without credits, without the rap song. Like, this is a nice short movie. I don't want another like 20 minutes of like getting people to be a little bit more believable. I like it, the length and sort of the structure that it is, but I also do kind of wish that there was a little bit more methodical or specific storytelling at points.
Yeah, I hear you. They definitely are leaning more towards the jokes. Like, every scene feels like it ends with a punchline, and, like, some of them are just, like, them getting their car stolen again or something. Like, I don't get me wrong, like, it's another running joke in the movie, is, like, they're constantly either losing their car, getting it stolen, or it gets exploded, or something happens to it. They finally end up with, like, a Pinto at the end of the movie. Yep. Yeah, I was saying before, like, it could have worked on its own without the comedy, like, as a straight drama, so it's a little strange that they don't play more into the straight zone. You know what I mean? That it feels almost a little bit like, we gotta keep reminding them that this is funny, when in fact, every once in a while, I kind of wanted to forget that I was watching a comedy, maybe.
Yes. I think there's a certain point where maybe it's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, or there's other ones where, like, they're movies that sort of, like, kind of balance the action with the comedy, and then the movie gets serious, like, the plot gets serious, and the movie gets serious. And I feel like, as a viewer, I'm kind of okay with that, because I'm like, well, what's happening on screen sort of requires fewer jokes. Like, you don't have to be devoid of jokes, but I think you need to kind of balance it better. And I kind of wish it got a little bit more serious, but I also do admire its sort of consistency throughout. So a couple little trivia things before we get into our, you know, figuring out if Tom Cruise could play in this or not. There's a couple Hanks connections here. Of course, Donna Dixon, his Sonny from Bosom Buddies, married to Dan Aykroyd in real life, so that's number one.
It's awesome.
So the second time in the last couple of years that he worked with Dabney Coleman, also in The Man with One Red Shoe, so.
Oh yeah, that's the one. I was watching the whole movie going, what was the other Dabney movie?
Mm-hmm. There is, I don't know if you caught this, but on IMDb there's trivia. During the scene where the pagans throw the virgin into the snake pit, a real snake is not used. Rather, a dummy snake was manipulated by the cast and crew.
Like, get out of town.
It's the fakest looking snake. How is this someone that, like, can you, guys, I want you to know, when you're watching this movie, not a real snake. That's a fake snake.
You know what it reminded me of? It's like that scene in Ed Wood when Bela Lugosi has to, like, move the octopus around by himself because they forgot to bring the motor to the set. They only stole, like, the one part. That's what it kind of feels like.
Aykroyd wanted Jim Belushi to play the Pep role, but he wasn't available, and Albert Brooks was offered the Pep role, which is the Hanks role. So Albert Brooks and Jim Belushi.
I could see Albert Brooks as Joe Friday. That would be, that would be funny as hell.
The house, Connie Swale's house, which is the one that he pulls up and say the Nightmare on Elm Street house that he's like terrified, that's also the same house used in The Burbs. That's Tom Hanks' house in The Burbs. And also apparently later in Desperate Housewives, one of the characters on that used it as well. So like it's a sort of a famous movie and TV house. But the only other trivia that I have is that the guy who shot this movie, Matthew F. Leonetti, cinematographer, did Fast Times and also Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, we hungry.
Which is a weird kind of diversity between Fast Times and this and Too Fast, Too Furious.
But it's got Fast in the title. Two of the movies have Fast in the title.
Fastnet.
Drag Fast.
Could Tom Cruise have played the role of Pep? Call him Pep. That's where it all comes from. First names. Pep Strebeck. Could Tom Cruise have played this role? Or if not, where would he have played?
You know, we've mentioned this a couple times. Like, where are the mid-80 Tom Cruise comedies? They just never happen. That's the one thing. It seems it's not that he's not funny. Like, he's funny in his movies. Like, he's very charming. Like, there's situations he gets into where his character is very hilarious at times, you know, whether it be Risky Business or Color of Money. But, you know, I don't know if he, I mean, it's probably, but it's hard to say because we don't have any, like, baseline, really. Like, he hasn't done any of these comedies. I'll tell you, though, I think he would have also made a great Joe Friday. He could have brought all of his, like, serious dramatic chops and stuff, like, you know, whatever Christopher Plummer's holding on to while he's going through this stuff, too. Just because I just think of him as, like, especially in this movie, as, like, what's he doing here? He's so, like, official. I've never seen him in a comedy, but, like, it would have been really funny to see Tom Cruise be Joe Friday and just be that no-nonsense kind of, like, almost like Ethan Hunt, just being, like, really in his face and all that. So I don't necessarily think that he would have been a good Pep in my mind, but I think he would have fit somewhere in this movie.
You know, I think a role that he could have played, and I don't know that he ever would have back in 1987, especially since he's so young in his career and so all about his looks, but I'm flashing forward to sort of this character in Tropic Thunder and thinking he could have played the Caesar role, the Hugh Hefner type role.
Great call.
And just like as like a really good-looking young guy, but in like old man makeup. And like, not that that would necessarily work, but I can see him playing that kind of goofy type of role really well, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, he even, that's weird. Like, even back then, if you look at old Hugh Hefner, I could see him, like, vaguely passing for young Hugh Hefner is what I meant. But if you look at old pictures of Hugh with, like, that jet black hair and sort of, like, he had a very strong jawline and stuff, I feel like maybe Cruise could have done that.
So now, Mike, we know where Tom Cruise could maybe possibly sort of kind of fit. Where would you fit? Where would you, if you had to want to walk on a role as a 40-year-old man,
yep,
almost 40-year-old man, into the world of Dragnet, where would you be?
You know, I thought maybe I'd be one of the pagan folks and everything, but there's so many of them. Like, I don't know. You couldn't really which one I was or anything. Maybe if he, like, ripped my pagan mask off. But I think what I'm going to go with is I'm going to steal one of their cars. Okay. I'm going to be the guy in the background. Cool. I mean, you're going to see, like, me full body, and I'm just going to, like, get that little Slim Jimmy into the window, pop it open, and take their car.
I was just thinking, I was like, what movie did we just watch where there somebody was breaking into their own cars, Always Be My Baby? So I was like, we just saw a movie where somebody was slipping into their own car with, like, a thing. And I was like, oh, right, yeah. I think the obvious sort of, like, enviable spot to be in would probably be somewhere at, you know, the Bait Mansion, if you will.
Yeah, but there's literally no other men in that. Like, the women are doing, like, the yard work. They're, like, washing their cars. They're playing volleyball. They're just hanging out by the pool.
I guess the pagan ritual is probably the most fun that you would have, especially, like, chasing after them, right? Like, after, you know, getting in a fight with them after it's sort of, after they rescue the Virgin Connie Swale, you know, they, like, just the battle that sort of ensues. I kind of like that a little bit.
Dude, you're right. It is. It's like the end of The Dark Knight Rises. Like, there's so many people, so many extras, and it's just like the two of them kicking everyone's ass.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, you said you'd be one of the people stealing the car. Maybe I'd be one of the cops who pull them over when they're on the way to the ritual, and they're pagans too. You know what I mean? Like, there's little bits, there's little roles here and there that I think are sort of funny, especially around that middle part of the movie, like, you know, about half an hour in, where they're finally understanding what the case is and how to sort of handle it and tackle it. I think there's sort of funny things to be there. So something pagan related for sure. Like, I think I want to be, you know, in that world, in that role.
All right.
Now, the next question, I don't know that this is, I think the answer might be no. Does Tom Hanks in this movie do anything that sets him on the road to becoming America's dad?
Well,
I feel like the answer is no, because I feel like that's not what his character is supposed to be in this.
I wanted to say yes.
I always want to say yes.
Yeah, you know, I do. But no, I think this guy's a confirmed bachelor, to be honest with you, you know? And if anything, maybe he'll marry a lady cop and the two of them will just, like, go on busting crime together. Maybe, oh, that would be a cool movie. Like, a male and, like, a married cop couple. Like, it doesn't even have to be male and female or whatever, but, like, I just think that would be a cool show.
I think we just need more married couples and things. Like, I was just reading in the news this morning that there's two women on the U.S. women's soccer team that are gonna get married after the World Cup's over, and I'm just like, that's cool. Like, I feel like we just need more couples, like, in things that, like, where couples don't usually get to work together. Like, can you imagine, like, playing, like, I know that they're not going to be married when this is going on, but, like, playing in the World Cup and, like, your wife or your husband is, like, on the field with you. Like, that's so cool. Like, that's such a weird, special, unique thing that I feel like, you know, cop movies or whatever have more couples.
It would add such a cool level of, like, drama and tension to the game. So, like, imagine if there were two baseball players married on separate teams and they came down to the World Series and it was like husband versus husband in the World Series. Like, that would be so tense.
HTML, husbands throwing, more or less.
Oh.
Any other thoughts about Dragnet before we go to the awards, the Woodies, if we're going to nominate this for some stuff? Anything else you want to say about Dragnet?
It's a fun watch, for sure. You know, like, if you're in a rut, I think it'll drag you out of it. It's fun. It's light. Like, it's got a cool sort of mystery going on there. It's like a real detective story in a comedy actually going on that's working. You know, I don't know if you're expecting, like, the show, if you've only seen the show and that's what you're expecting, like, it's not that.
Either you would love it, I think, or hate it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'd really love to read some reviews about it and wonder, like, what people were saying. Like, what, how could they do this to Dragnet? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is this farce of Dragnet? Like, what have they turned Dragnet into? Like, no, like, I've watched the show, I've seen the movie. I think it's the kind of thing that it sort of transcends genres. Like, it works because the core pieces are so strong to begin with. The whole character Joe Friday, the, you know, just the facts, the theme song, the badge, just LA, you know, taking place there. It's always about LA. Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun, and they should check it out. And I still think there's room for, you know, Michael Mann to make his, you know, hard-boiled Dragnet movie one day if he needed to.
So I don't, you know, that I've said, I don't know if I've said on this podcast, but I know that you know that I'm not a huge fan of Rotten Tomatoes, but I went on Rotten Tomatoes to see what the critics said about this movie because of what you said, you know, and sort of inspired me. And 34 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, 50% fresh, so real split down the middle. And the critics' consensus, which is the one that's written by a Rotten Tomatoes staff writer, while it's sporadically funny and certainly well cast, Dragnet is too clumsy and inconsistent to honor its classic source material.
Wow.
So I feel like this is a thing down the middle where it's like either it clicks and it works for you, or you don't know what they're doing and feel like it's not honoring this. I can sort of see either one of those. You know what I mean? Like, either you get it or you're like, I don't know what's happening and I don't like it.
Yeah. I hear that. Yeah, because that's what kind of been saying is like it doesn't follow the formula of a comedy. It follows more the formula of like a crime drama, but it's a funny one. Like, that's the difference. Like,
yeah.
I don't think you know, like, you're expecting to laugh at this, but you should.
So now for the Woodies, I think even though this is one of the better movies so far, I don't want to nominate it for best film because I know what's coming. Definitely not worst film, definitely not best of the worst. I'm going to nominate, though, for the first time in the category, best Hanks role, Pep Strebeck.
Dun, 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 dun. Nice. Yeah, Pep's great. He's so positive and, you know, good at his job, too. Joey, these might be candidates for best film cops, actually. Like, they're really good cops. Like,
they're pretty good.
They get kicked off. Here's my criteria. If you're so good at being a movie cop that you get kicked off the case halfway through the movie, you're a good movie cop.
And then work your way back on?
Yeah, and he even loses his badge and gets it back at the end. So I'm down with these guys as, like, great movie cops.
Love it. Most wasted performance, no. Best ensemble, no. I just don't think there's enough people. Best fight, I'll say Friday and Pep versus Pagans in Dragnet.
And I love when they're at the rally and they have the giant billboard and it's like electronic and he's like, Pagan, people against goodness and normalcy. And fucking Hanks just turns to him and he goes, you put that together all by yourself, Joe?
Yeah. Best dance scene? No? Is there one?
No, but no. If you watch the music video for that City of Crime, it's kind of embarrassing how much they're dancing.
I highly recommend. I wish that was in the credits. Like, you know, like, I feel like if it was a modern day movie, they would have had the credits scrolling on one half of the screen. They would have the music video on the other half, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like because it was back then, they just played the audio. But if you go on YouTube, you can find the video and boy, oh boy.
Plus they have the opening Dragnet theme is like a half of like a scratch remix. It's like Dragnet,
oh, yes, yeah.
Dragnet, 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 just the facts, just the facts.
And that's why I thought, like, that was, when, you know, when I turned this on, I was like, I don't know what this is. Like, I think it's saying, like, this is Dragnet, but it's not what you're expecting. Like, I understand, like, that, but I also, like, I don't know, A, what Dragnet is, but B, what it's going to be. I know what it's not going to be, and that's, like, an old-timey cop show, but I don't know what it actually is going to be, and it sort of took me time to sort of get there. You know what I mean?
If I'm not mistaken, what they did with the show, like, it was on black and white version, and then it came back in 69, and it was called, like, Dragnet 69, and then when that run ended, it came back again, or every year, it would be, like, Dragnet 70, Dragnet 72, and it would have helped if this was, like, Dragnet 87, like, you know,
yep.
And just saying, hey, same universe, but, like, it's today, folks, so, like, get in that state of mind.
Best party scene, I'm going to say the Bait Mansion and the Bait Reunion in Dragnet.
Mm-hmm.
Best Hanks outfit wardrobe, I'm going to say as undercover cop.
It reminds me of the way Kip looked. Oh, by the way, Kip and Pep?
Ooh, sunny, sunny, sunny.
The way Kip looked in the flashback in high school when he was like burnout.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. When he goes undercover, he kind of looks like the same. It's kind of like the same sort of look, right?
Yeah.
Best death, no, he does not die. Best line.
Oh, man, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Just because of the way he delivers it. Dan Aykroyd says, surf's up, Beach Boy, but not for you. You'll be hanging 10 downtown. And it's just like one of those like hard-boiled, like, it kind of makes sense, but also doesn't really kind of makes sense. I like when they break into the wholesome milk factory, and like, it's not really a favorite line, but you know, Hanks is like, he takes off his gas mask and he's like tasting his lips and he's just like, can't quite taste it. It's something like, he's like, well, it's milk. I mean, we're in a milk factory. Like, you saw it before you knocked on the sign, it said wholesome milk. You know what it is.
I remember, I think that's the same tank from Die Hard, if I'm not mistaken. Hashtag tank, by the way, too fast, too forever. They got a tank. Ooh. But yeah, I remember someone back, way back in like the 80s was watching this. Maybe I was watching it with my parents at home on VHS, and one of them had just seen, or they had just seen Die Hard, and was like, hey, it's the same, because it's like a flat tank with that long sort of barrier buster sticking out of it, right? It's got like that thing in the front. So I don't know, we got to check that tank's IMDb and see what else he was doing that year.
I hope so. I'm gonna pull for best line, friendships start with first names, Joe, which I think
that's very nice.
Kind of nice thing. Best freak out, I'm sure he freaks out, but there's nothing wrong thing. Is there a super memorable freak out?
Maybe the one when he goes full Friday on the guy and tells him to like straighten up and...
Okay. I'll say going full Friday in Dragnet. Best soundtrack theme, maybe?
It's a city of crime.
Oh, yeah, also City of Crime, okay.
Oh, God, but I don't like that song. It, like, it doesn't sound good, but I prefer Dragnet.
Also, okay, so I'll say Dragnet Remix and City of Crime. Best Hank's Love Story, worst Hank's Love Story, no. Most Badass Role, no. And then best or worst non-Hank's role, I think Dan Aykroyd's good, but I also don't know that, you know... Well, actually, we have John Candy Volunteers and Peter Scolari as Henry and Bosom Buddies. Like, I feel like he's right on par with those. I'm gonna put
him down here. You know, it's funny that you say, like, this is a Dan Aykroyd vehicle, and I could understand that, like, this feels like a property, you know, he developed, and his fingerprints are all over it for sure, but Hanks is really going toe-to-toe with Aykroyd, and Aykroyd is pretty seasoned at this point. SNL and all that kind of thing. Like, he's got a bigger... reputation, and you know, they're great together, they got great chemistry, it feels like they're really like giving to each other, you know what I'm saying? That's a thing from Barry, right, where it's like, wow, you gave everything for me, I didn't have to do anything. It feels like they're doing this like effortlessly at times, like they're really just knocking it back and forth. So I would say hell yeah with Aykroyd in this.
All right, do you have any other thoughts about Dragnet before we come back in 2 weeks for a little movie called Big?
I'm good. I'm just glad that this isn't like the last too, that we broke that streak of that serious dramatic Hanks and all that kind of stuff. Like, it could have, you know, I'm just so happy that I feel like we're out of a rut, even though it's only one movie out of a rut, but you know, we're clawing our way out.
Well, we're only a handful of movies away from the beginning of that streak, of the unbeatable streak, but you know, Dragnet and Big next week, I think we're on the upswing for sure. Again, Punchline TBD in 2 episodes, but we will get there when we get there. But for all things Hanks for the memories, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us hanks@cageclub.me. We have a Patreon page. We have a Threadless shop. Find the links to those at cageclub.me. Check out Cruise Club every other Friday, alternating with this. Next week, we've got Far and Away, the second Cruise Kidman movie. And then come back, like I said, in 2 weeks for Big. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks for Big, right here on Hanks for the Memories.
Kids, it'll grow back.